You know, it's a really interesting question. We had in Open Lines just a few callers ago, a guy who's working on a historical paper for a college course, and he was looking to do a 12-page report or so on the history of ufology, and he wanted to know if anybody recommended a book. And I have to say, you know, we wouldn't ordinarily do a book on the history of ufology because it's too disconnected to the topic. We kind of have this thing about talking to people who have primary experience or researching something and are really kind of upside down in something, where they're not just some cool observer, as so often historical books are. They're just sort of surveys of existing material. And that's not actually a great coast-to-coast show. So I was really struggling coming up with one. A couple of people called in Alien Agenda from Jim Mars. But that's not really a history of UFOs, although there's a lot of historical information in there. Jim Mars is making an argument for a particular type of understanding about an alien invasion, but it does. I don't know whether that would be the perfect book for what this report is, although it's always a good read if you've never read it. Alien Agenda is just awesome. I mean, everything. I love Jim Mars' stuff, period. I did go onto my shelves, though, just to see whether I had anything. And if you're interested, there's a book called UFOs and Ufology, The First 50 Years. I never did this book on the air, though, on Coast to Coast. I don't even remember why I have it. Somebody may have sent it to me, or the author might have been on with another book. But Paul Devereaux is the author. Also, I think Peter Brooks-Smith is the co-author, UFOs and Ufology, The First 50 Years. See if you can't find that at Amazon or something like that in a used form. And we'll see whether we can't get a couple other suggestions too coming up this hour. There's a couple of different topics that are floating out there for Open Lines. And so we'll go the rest of this hour with your suggestions on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. John is in Long Island on Coast to Coast, been waiting for a while for Open Lines. Glad to grab him. We'll get everybody on before the end of this hour. John?
Hello, Ian. Happy New Year.
And to you?
I got two questions. Now, you're an ordained minister, and my question to you, my first question is, there's so many different types that about. You got the King James that's supposed to be the most accurate, and then you have the Catholics, you have the Protestants. We can go on forever. How do you know if you're actually teaching out of the right Bible, out of the rendition, your rendition of the Bible?
Right. Who told you the King James Version is the most accurate?
Oh, should I say it? I don't know if I should say it here. Harold Camping.
Okay. That's a particular point of view. The belief, it's almost a kind of a mystical interpretation, in my opinion. That people believe that since it was the first commonly published version of the Bible in English, that it is sort of imbued with special interpretive powers. Modern scholars wouldn't even call the King James Version a translation. They would call it a paraphrase.
But
It
was it
it's
at?
not
I'm
it's
sorry.
not accurate. I guess to be very specific, it really is one of the least accurate, if you want to be, you know, exacting word for word. It's one of the least accurate popular versions of the Bible in English.
What is the most accurate versions of the Bible?
Well,
The
that would get into a certain, you know, level of dispute. I'm partial to the HarperCollins Study Bible.
Okay.
HarperCollins Study Bible. And it's accurate because it uses a basic sort of modern, very academic translation of the texts, but then it also breaks down the disputed translations. So it footnotes a ton of stuff at the bottom of every page, and you can look at some of the alternate versions of some of the interpretations.
Okay, my second question, Ian, and about at least four callers back, at least. We're talking about the end of days. What's your take on the actual? Do you believe that the Bible can actually be decoded? Do you believe that, like in the Bible says, not even the sun will know, only God would know?
Right.
But do you believe that something can actually, you can actually read this thing, you can actually find out the end of days, and what's your
No,
turn?
Nor does the Bible say that you can do that, which to me is one of those ironies that very faithful people say that they that they've been able to crack some sort of code, and they use the Book of Revelation mostly for this. It's not part of my belief. In fact, I'll just lay it out here and move on. And thanks for the question. But as a Christian, I take Jesus on his word that we really shouldn't fixate about that. We will never know, so don't bother trying to know, and just get to the work of trying to treat people better and to bring more justice into the world. So that's what I do. If Jesus had said, hey, you know, go through the Bible and try and figure out what the end of days is, and somebody who gets it right gets some sort of eternal prize or something, I'd be doing that. But he actually said, don't do that, so I don't do that. Instead, the feeling is that that's really not how we should be spending our time, so I don't. But I you know, so far everybody's been wrong on their predictions. Someday somebody will be right. And in the meantime, there's a lot of people who are cold and hungry, and I'd rather be trying to help them. Craig is in Pontiac, Illinois on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Craig.
How you doing, Ian?
All right, it's open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I'm calling about the guy who called about the steam engine car.
Yeah, sure. How come we don't have steam engine cars, he said?
Yeah, well, I was wondering why you couldn't just use microwaves to heat the water, you know, and use some other power source for the microwaves.
Well, ergo, the question, though, is that at some point you start to look at the return on the power source. Are you using more power to create energy than you would if you were just using a straight combustion engine? I think that's an intriguing question. You're saying, like, maybe if you had an electric car that powered microwaves that heated water that then drove the axles.
Right, and then the axles could be turbines themselves or small generators, and you could just never have to stop for power.
I am the dumbest guy I know, and that seems to fit. That works for me. So I don't know. Maybe there's somebody else out there can explain why that wouldn't work. But good, Craig. Craig, I think that's good. Who knows? Hey, Don?
Oh, bud, you're driving me crazy. Every time I call into this show, I come out with more questions than I have answers for.
All right. Well, that's all right. Where are you going to take us?
My two topics got switched because when the gentleman was calling about the mortgages in Japan, you know, going to 100-year mortgages.
Right.
It reminds me of a program or some programs my wife ties me up to a chair and makes me watch about these houses, and, you know, selling and buying houses. They were talking, like, over in Europe, how people are into, like, 50-year mortgages, and like you guys were, you know, discussing, that they turn them over, you know, to family, to family, to family. And that touched on my second topic, which is now my first topic. It seems to me our economy, and I don't know who's doing it, but it seems to me they're engineering us into socialism.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Huh?
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, they want to make us into a socialist country. I mean, I see no reason why every bank is failing, all these businesses are failing, and so now the government is, we're becoming owners of the banks and businesses, when it makes absolutely no sense to me. We're printing more money than we will ever have in 50 years. So,
well, strictly speaking, that's not socialism. That's fascism.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
A fine line from this to that, Marxism,
okay.
Fascism.
Well,
there's
an important distinction, though. I mean, because the idea socialism being that, you know, everybody from each according to their ability to each according to their need.
Right.
I mean, there's a much different sense of sort of sharing the wealth. But in this case, that would be the government owning the industries and then essentially the government owning the economy. I too loathe a lot about this bailout. But I think what it comes right down to is a lot of these people in Washington are pretty flat footed and they didn't know what the heck they didn't know what to do.
Absolutely. And my other issue was about Israel. And this will never happen again in my lifetime or any other kid's lifetime. When I was 17 years old, I took a class called The Bible is Literature in high school.
Sure, they still teach it.
Well, hey, it's been a long time since I was out of high school.
Right. No, I understand.
But I've been a big fan of Israel ever since I was 17. And, you know, like the wife derides me all the time, it's never going to change. It's happened for thousands and thousands of years. But I just wish people would get off of Israel's back. You know, I read Golda Meir's autobiography, Menachem Begin, Anwar Sadat. I read history like it's going out of style. But I wish people would understand Israel's position. If Hamas and Hezbollah would stop bombing these people, they wouldn't have to go in there and take care of that. When they turned over part of Gaza to the Palestinians, they left a lot of pristine buildings for, you know, like greenhouses and stuff like that.
Sure.
And they came in and they demolished it and took it.
No argument for me. I think Hamas has got to stop lobbing missiles and bombs, and I'm glad that Israel took the stand it did by discontinuing that themselves. So fair enough. I think it's been fairly evenly split on who's getting the majority of the criticism. But I think in this case, you know, how many missiles can you take before you have to start sending some back? I think. As a nation, Israel had to make a point. I think they may have made it with too much punctuation, but I don't know that they were wrong. Stan is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast. Hey, Stan.
Hi, Ian. I want to talk about, I think, a comment that Joe Biden had made about the Obama administration and the foreign policy decisions they're going to be taking that would be challenged similar to the Kennedy administration.
Tell me about that. What do you mean?
Well, I think what he had said that the Russians, Iranians would be challenging Obama within the next 9 to 10 months, you know, to make certain decisions or respond to certain issues that are going to be coming up. The Russians are right now messing around with the Ukrainians, but the Russians also had naval bases in the Black Sea, for instance, that they probably want back.
Okay.
What's your concern? Well, I think the tagline to that was that the American people would not like some of the decisions that the administration would be making. I guess we'll have to wait and see how this all plays out.
Well, what about that seems wrong? It sounds to me like anytime you make a tough decision or any decision at all, there'll be some people that will like it and other people that will hate it, even if it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, it's kind of the hallmark of a good decision. If some people hate it and some people love it, you probably made the right call. Let's go with Paul is in Michigan on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Paul?
Hey, how you doing, Ian?
Good. It's Open Lines. Where you want to take us?
Well, I just wanted to put out another little kooky 2012 idea prediction.
Okay.
I was thinking because the Mayans stopped their calendar at 2012 at December,
right.
And there was also a new documentary about Nostradamus on the History Channel, a new book where he leaves out all the pegs in a wheel that's supposed to represent time.
Okay.
Now I was thinking maybe at 2012 we learn how to manipulate time, and that's why you cannot measure time the same way we used to.
Oh, that's interesting.
Changing time the way it normally balanced out.
Yeah.
I was just kind of curious. I just wanted to put that kooky thing out there for you guys.
I thought that kooky. Would that be cool?
You know, I haven't heard anyone else put a theory on that or bring it up, but it was
and I like the fact.
Ideas.
I like the fact that you brought that up here on Open Lines, and I'm grateful for that. So thank you, Paul, because I'm big on that. Actually, I think that's what Open Lines should all be about, sort of exploring big stuff that you've been pondering yourself. Frank is in CR, or Cedar Rapids for the rest of the world, but CR if you're in the know, on Coast to Coast AM. Frank?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Where are you going to take us?
Well, kind of on the 2012 thing, and this has done a little bit for levity and a little bit more of also a little bit of kind of a wake-up call for people, and that's the issue with 2012 and everybody thinking that because the Mayan calendar stops in 2012, had the question of, well, how far did you want them to take the calendar before they were allowed to stop without freaking us all out? So I started doing, a little bit of research on that, and I checked every store in this city, and I mean every one of them I could walk into. And according to the research that I've done, we're not going to make it to 2012, December 21st or anything else, because all of the calendars I found all end December 31st, 2009. So I think we're doomed long before 2012.
Well, that's a funny idea. But if they came up with an eternal calendar and they were selling it at a bookstore in Cedar Rapids, and it was the eternal calendar ended in 2012, you might want to say, well, gosh, that doesn't seem very eternal to me. But your point is taken in other respects, though, and I know you're kidding, and it's actually a very funny line, is that you remember just a month ago, we were talking about this very same thing, and the question came up of the disparity between the Western calendar and the Mayan calendar, and that we are 4 years off. And that theoretically 2012 already happened. Now, that having been said, let's say the Mayans were way ahead of the game and they knew that our Western calendars were going to be all screwy, and or that for whatever reason the calculation is not wrong, it's just we're calling it the wrong thing. For example, maybe it's the end of the Mayan calendar is 2016 or something like that, but we think of it as 2012 based on our calendar. I don't know. Either way you look at it, there seems to be a four-year disparity. We have either survived it or we've yet to experience it. So I'd like to think that that there's a lot of room, too, maybe even an opportunity for travel. I think it'd be fun to be down in Mexico for 2012, don't you? Standing on top of a Mayan pyramid for something like that. Linda is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast AM. Linda?
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Hi. Good. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I just wanted to remind everyone to feed their birds and their squirrels because the nut trees didn't make enough food for them this year, and they can really help them survive if they'll put out some sunflower seeds and some suet and some stuff like that.
Sure. Well, suet's really important because it's got that high fat content, so that's good for them.
That'll help them because, bless their little hearts, they're doing the best they can. And we're having a hard time down in the South with this unusual cold, just like the rest of the nation, except we're not really used to it.
Yeah, I know that. I was on an elevator when I was in Mexico. I was on an elevator with a guy from Houston. And we were just chatting as the elevator was going down. And I said, well, you got to be loving this weather. But I said, I suppose it's always kind of nice in Texas. And he said, oh, I don't know. It's pretty chilly. It's been in the 30s. And I said, hey, you come up to Minnesota, we'll talk chilly.
Yeah, 30s is pretty good.
Yeah. But your point's well taken. And let's remind people to put out food for birds and squirrels.
Yeah, and a little bit of water. But that's going to freeze in the dish, so just make it a little bit, and then if they'll do it every day, they'll learn a lot about these birds.
Sure. I think that's really
fascinating.
Important. Oh, they are, and I enjoy watching them. I was, not to keep mentioning the vacation, but I'm really into birds, too, and I like kind of the big raptors and gulls and stuff, and I was really enjoying the pelicans, which were incredibly cool, these big, giant brown pelicans. Diving for fish, but I was sitting by the pool, and there was a guy, I don't know where he's from, Arizona, I think, and he looked up, and there were some seagulls flying overhead, about 20 of them, and he looked up and went, look, condors. I doubt that, but, all right, anyway, so let's get back, open lines, last half hour, Coast to Coast AM, where are you going to take us? Well, always enjoy open lines on Coast to Coast and know that you're going to take us in interesting places. Got a full boat here. We'll get to as many as we can. I refer you to my blog. If you go take a look online at coasttocoastam.com, just to see some of these cool photos of these whales. My wife took the shots, but I held the camera bag. That's about all I had to do with them. But they're cool anyway. If you want to see them, you can look on my blog at coasttocoastam.com and go from there. And where will you take us from here? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's run the table and end strong. And Robin is in Oakland on Coast to Coast AM on the Wild Card Line. Robin?
Hi, Deus te amat, Ian, and your wonderful Gina, and I do too.
Thank you.
How are you?
Very good. Thank you for throwing Gina in there and everybody who works on Coast to Coast.
Oh, yes, indeed. I want to run through real quickly three quick points. One of them was in regards to the 12-page history of the ufology. That's not very long to cover ufology. And the Lamsa Bible, do you like the Lamsa Bible directly from the Aramaic to the English?
Well, you say directly from the Aramaic to the English. I've never spent much time with it as a translated work, so I'd like to see from what sources did it go into the Aramaic? Aramaic being a spoken language in the biblical era, and so how many texts were written originally in Aramaic, we don't know. But I don't know enough about the origin of the proto material for that translation, but I'll go take a look.
He's very thorough in the front of it. You would enjoy it. Next one up is the Stanley Steamer. Years ago in Pasadena, I knew a man, and I think his name was Mr. Nutting. And I had the pleasure of driving in a Stanley Steamer. And he switched over from, I think, a gasoline engine, which was the initial heating element, to butane, and was in the Easter parade at Knott's Berry Farm. I think it was in the late 60s, right after he'd made the conversion with his entire family, and the car exploded, and he and his whole family died.
Oh, no! No, I was not expecting the ending of the story.
Absolutely broke my heart.
Oh,
it's just with that one changeover. So,
totally get that.
Having the right thing to get your steam going is a real critical thing. But I'm sure you could find that online for sure.
Wow.
I don't have online access. And the last thing that I wanted to mention is, the Mayans felt that we were in the fifth age. And in any kind of change over into the next phase, they felt that we would be going through these different ages. I often wonder, the next nova that's going to be on this coming week is going to be covering the magnetic field that protects our world.
Sure.
And the tilting of the axis.
Right.
And it may be that in having that tilt that, who knows, we may move into string theory and move over into the next dimension.
Well, that's an interesting idea, and I'm glad to hear that Nova is doing it. And I will tell you, Robin, I'm always glad when I see the mainstream, highly respectable media like Nova doing a great coast-to-coast topic. And they do a lot of coast-to-coast topics on Nova. And on PBS, for that matter, they have a very different type of voiceover, and they have lots of people with big, giant foreheads who are doing the interviews. But at the same time, I think that shows you, again, I think, of the impact that this program has. We keep a lot of these topics alive until other media decide to do something about it. John is in Cleveland, Ohio, on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Yes, I think people in this country ought to realize we're not being told the truth about the horrors that Israel is perpetrating against the poor Gazan people who have been subjected to a starvation and disease blockade. And in fact, if you check some of the, even Alex Jones's Infowars.com some of the foreign media that is telling millions and billions of people actually around the world what we're not being told.
I don't know why you say we're not being told, because I've heard this story, and so when you say we're not being told, I've seen stories on this, the starvation, the deprivation, the
whole...
It's been everywhere, John.
It's been to some small degree, but if you'll check, like, globalresearch.ca, find out the incredible, appalling Nazi-like tactics that are being perpetrated. It's an absolute irony that this country that really has been using the Holocaust to justify this kind of Nazi tactics has been denounced by people like the rapporteur for the United Nations, Richard Falk, who says what they're doing there is exactly what the Nazis did against the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto.
Yeah, there's been several very interesting things, but all of these things have been covered in the mainstream media. So when you say that it's not there, it is. I mean, and depending on where you fall down on that side, we were just talking about the rockets earlier, but there's lots of conversations to be had about what's happening there, and hopefully the ceasefire on the part of the Israelis will also mean a ceasefire on the part of Hamas, and maybe that'll move things along a little bit. We've got Darlin in Casper, Wyoming, on an open line on Coast to Coast. Darlin?
Hi.
Hi.
First, I want to thank you so much. I'm security at night for 12 years, and you've kept me awake for 12
wow.
years. Thank you.
A female security guard up all night, right?
Yep.
I hope that never gets. I mean, that's really interesting. I think you're the first female security guard I've ever spoken with who's doing an all night shift.
There can't be many
of you.
No, there's not. What I wanted to talk to you tonight about is the two things, the oil shortage and unemployment. Living in Wyoming, I have a hard time seeing the oil shortage. We have a huge oil field here called the Teapot Dome, which is owned by the Navy. And it is so big, it covers most of Wyoming and extends into several states. And it makes me wonder, why doesn't the Navy start drilling on it more and using our oil? The only thing I can think of is that maybe we want to use everybody else's first.
Well, I don't know what the story is or what, because when you get in Wyoming, of course, there's these larger environmental issues. And so I'm not sure where that is, but it sounds like a second Teapot Dome scandal. So if we find out more about that, we'll talk about it certainly coming up. You had another quick point you wanted to make?
Yes, I have a hard time seeing the unemployment. We in Wyoming, our unemployment is at 3%. We are so short of workers that we pay McDonald's workers over $10 an hour. But we're the least populated state in the United States, so maybe nobody wants to live in Wyoming.
Well, I think you've answered your own question. I mean, it's not that people don't want to live there, but it's what kind of industry, what kind of climate. Some people just don't like wide open spaces and big, beautiful skies. I don't know why, but you would think that if there are job opportunities there, people would migrate to them. I think there's too much of a got to be in a big city kind of a mentality in this country. I will say this is in terms of immigration coming back in to the United States from Mexico. And maybe this was just a timing thing, but we asked somebody and they said, no, pretty much the way it is all the time. There was nobody at immigration when we came in. About 20 people sitting in these little booths with their, stickers and whatever to let us back in the country. And it was misleading, but it didn't seem like a big long line to try to get in, at least legally, anyway. Let me go to Alonzo, who's in Michigan on Coast to Coast on the first time caller line. Alonzo?
Hi, Ian. Good to get through to you. Wanted to pick up a thread the fellow aptly touched on about an hour ago regarding bullet trains. I'm about a 30 year professional in air, land, sea transportation logistics worldwide.
Yeah.
And retired Air Force officer and consultant to the big three and been all over this planet. There are solutions to our national problems, and I'm working on a book presently, which I call the American Renaissance Plan. And it is we have the opportunity to create 8 to 10 to 12 million new jobs literally within a 2 to 3 year period by the mere construction of a transcontinental maglev corridor. And we can do that as a nation for considerably less than some of the other infrastructure bailouts. For instance, we can run a corridor from Baltimore to San Francisco on I-70 or I-80 down the middle with no eminent domain issues, with no environmental impact issues, with very relatively archaic construction technology. We can put millions of people to work across 15 states of the corridor and allow the major transportation companies, including the big three automakers, to diversify themselves and participate in the construction of cargo train vehicles. We can diversify into alternative energies through a superconductor system. Did you know you can even create a national superconductive utility grid once you have a maglev corridor? And
all sounds good to me. So get to work and convince all of these important people that's what we should be doing.
Well, that's the problem, is you know, there are visionaries out there, but getting your message percolated to the top is pretty darn difficult. But
I wish you the best of success in it. It sounds like something exactly like what we need, and I need to get a couple of the other callers in before the top of the hour, or I would spend more time praising you on your genius, Alonzo. But it sounds good to me. Let's get to Dave in Portland, Oregon, on Coast to Coast. Dave, in the time we have left, where you want to take us?
Well, I heard you mention Lucha Libre, and I'm a professional wrestler, and I've been wrestling since 2001. And I've worked for a very famous promotion, Portland Wrestling, where a lot of national wrestlers have come out. And I live in Roddy Piper country also. My wrestling name is El Perro Bravo, and Pitbull is my American name. And I order my masks through Rey Mysterio Sr. In Mexico.
Okay.
My masks are all custom-made. And I really enjoy Lucha Libre. I've had a lot of fun.
Good. Well, I love that. And a friend of mine named Spider Baby is a bit of a wrestler, too. And so I may try and grab him one of those Green Bay Packer mascaras, as they're called in Mexico. Let's get to Donald, east of the Rockies, Granite City, Illinois, on Coast to Coast AM. Donald?
Yeah, we're calling right from the river, from St. Louis, the old George and Ori area.
I kind of know just where that is.
I wanted to talk to you about an hour ago. You had somebody call in. You guys seemed a little bit confused about the marijuana and hemp.
I'm not confused about it. No. Nope.
Well, the marijuana and hemp is the same thing.
Actually, no. There's a big difference in the way.
No. Hemp is from the stalk of the marijuana plant. Marijuana comes from the bud and the leaves. It's also a cannabis, just like hashish.
There's a couple of different types, though, and that's why you got.
But they're all cannabis. They're all cannabis.
Okay, but one doesn't produce the same effect that the other does, and especially if you look at like ditchweed, for example, and you know it grows all the time and it gets often confused.
Yeah, but we're talking about marijuana. What you get marijuana from is
the
same plant that they grew all over the United States during World War I and World War II. Farmers planted it on the side of their fields because it was so prolifically, they didn't have to cultivate it. They just planted it for rope and for cloth.
I understand that.
But that is the fiber. Hemp is the fiber.
I understand that.
The hemp
plants that have been developed are different, and I tell you why I know this, and you can certainly have.
Yeah, but they're still all cannabis.
Wait, you're going to let me talk here. Everybody's got a right to have an opinion on this, but that hemp and weed aren't the same thing is a conversation that's been going on at a level much bigger than what we're going to get to in the rest of the 7 minutes. But I would go ahead and I would ask you just to Google it. The difference between hemp and, you know, cannabis and marijuana. And I'll leave the rest up to you. You Google that difference, hemp pot or hemp and marijuana. And I'll leave the rest of the argument up to the internet, and you can take it up with them. Mark is in Moose Lake, Minnesota, on Coast to Coast. Mark?
Hey, I was going to talk to you about the whole bailout thing. And me and I'm a sound engineer, and me and the band, all bands that I mix, we, you know, and bands I mix and stuff, we sat down. I was at the Blue Ox, and we were talking about this, and we all thought, why don't we just, if they just gave the money from everybody from 18 years old up to senior citizens and just doled out all the money to everybody, we'd have got $450,000 each. Wouldn't that have stimulated the economy better than just giving it to wherever it went?
You are going by an email that got floated around, and the math doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. So if you were going by that email and you actually didn't sit down and crunch the numbers on your own, who wouldn't look at that and go at the end, why, that makes a ton of sense. Give everybody $500,000, problem is solved. But that's actually, it doesn't work. So if you get that email, just take a little time with it. I think you'll be glad, and you'll probably send it to fewer people afterward. Is it Serge in Montreal on the international line? Serge?
Yes, hello.
Hi, yeah. We have just a minute for you. Go ahead.
Okay, I would like to talk about the Roman Emperor Constantine. I think he pretended to be a Christian to squash the slaves' rebellion, because the only thing that he permitted to be put in the New Testament was about love. But one thing that Jesus said, it was, love thy neighbor like yourself. Logically, yourself, you wouldn't want to be a slave. So he was against slavery, Jesus. He was also crucified as a rebel, because
true,
they had different type of punishment.
Well,
at
that's
that time,
that's a fair opinion to have. There's historically, we know that Constantine was actually baptized on his deathbed, and that he struggled with, as a leader of Rome, what it would be like for him to fully live up to the Christian call. But his mother was, and Constantine very likely wasn't in his lifetime per se, except toward the end. And we'll leave it there. So if you, always interesting, Constantine's a very interesting character, and a controversial one still to this day, as you can hear, as are so many of the subjects that come up. So we always encourage you, use your best critical minds, and do the research yourself, and just don't go by that something that somebody sends you, but go and crack a book yourself. And we look forward to hearing what you come up with sometime on Open Lines. In the meantime, George, you got that cool show on alternative energy coming up on Monday night. Deus Tiamat, and I do too.